Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C., and shortly you'll be hearing from my co-host, Denise. Today's podcast is slightly different. We had the pleasure of attending the second annual Black Feminism, Womanism, and the Politics of Women of Color in Europe one-day symposium in Amsterdam on the 7th of October. And in the following, you'll hear a few clips from some of our favorite facilitators. There were many, and it would be too much to include all of them, so there's no shade for the people we don't include here, but you'll hear why we've included the ones we have.
I can't even begin to give you all of it, but here are some that I was able to record and I found like especially noteworthy. This is from Love, Sex, and Subjugated Knowledges module. Specifically, this is M. Nicole Horsley in her talk, which is labeled Freak Like Me, Reclaiming Black Female Pleasure Through Black Femininity and the Black Radical and Ratchet Imagination. I absolutely loved this talk because I think a lot of times in academic and political circles, there's not enough talk about pleasure and about how our pleasure as Black women is politicized. Here's a snippet.
So T.S. Madison is a riot, but does this kind of reclamation as well of femme politics through the Bible culture as a site that continues to think about pleasure through this liberatory way of being? As I guess the pleasure ninjas would say, there is no liberation without pleasure. Pleasure can't happen without this vein of thinking about how we can then assume this kind of identity politics and know what's at stake when we think about femininity for Black women, right? And also, she also here helps us resist this prescriptive making and unmaking of these existing discourses by imagining our own regenerative possibilities for freedom, pleasure, and survival. Under this neoliberal project, women like T.S. Madison and Lady LaShore, and I heard some people in the audience saying that they knew Lady LaShore, they become this answer to Robin D.G.'s Kelly's answers or question. He asked, how do we reconstruct our social and individual relationships through reclamations of desire, queerness, and failure, end quote. In other words, how do we imagine real liberation through the geographies of human flesh? How do we map the unmappable as they create a new definition of freedom? Is it possible to think of resistance itself as pleasure or pleasurable? Is it possible for Black femmes to imagine pleasure as a symbolic, of social justice? And why do we look to bottoms, physical, geographic, material, flesh, to examine Black women's liberation in America and Europe?
This is Dominique Hansen talking about post-independent women navigating global Africanism and feminism in the neoliberal age. I really like this one because she talks about kind of the unspoken assumption of capitalism within a lot of feminist representation.
As a pop single, Flawless is engineered to be an empowerment anthem, delivering Beyoncé's trademark message of female success and independence. It's easy to see how Adichie's words support this message. Throughout the spoken passage are terms evoking motivational self-help language with a distinctly economic spin. It is precisely the ultimate affirmation of individual competitiveness that carries the most pronounced ideological undertones, tones, and perhaps even creates the most jarring contradiction. Would, following Adichie's parenthesis, raising girls to see each other as competitors for jobs and accomplishments, structurally really differ from having them compete for male attention? The notion that the wrongs of sexism are simply undone by the rights of capitalism, by extending equal economic rights to unequally positioned people, obscures the mutual implications of sexism and neoliberalism as systems which both rely on the success of some and the exploitation and domination of others.
This is Dorrit Jones, who does a talk on Through Our Lens, Filming Our Resistance, Does the Future Look Black in Europe? And this isn't something that she said during her own presentation, but something that she said during another presentation. But I just thought that it was such a profound thing to say, and I feel like it needed to be said, about seeing ourselves outside of the context of our oppression.
How we are constrained by so many things, and you mentioned quite a lot in terms of white supremacy, oppression in general. I think one of the things we have to also do is give room for our freedom, for us to play, expand who we are as black women, women of colour, womanist, activists, however we name ourselves. I think there should be room for us to expand in that and not constantly be framed either from how we are perceived and then how we internalise that and then push that back out. And so I think one thing I want to end or to say is let's try and keep expanding ourselves and have room to move rather than us being this one political thing. Yeah.
I think one of the pitfalls is that there's an assumption that there is one black feminism, that there's a one ideology that we have to ascribe to, and I think that doesn't serve us at all, because it doesn't account for the difference. And when you have, so for example, you may have black feminism through the eyes of heteronormativity, that creates a particular black feminism, right, that I may not ascribe to. So I think it's really important that when we're talking about a black feminist gaze, that actually that is in itself works on the assumption that there is one gaze. And also the whole notion of the gaze can be problematic in itself, because it works off of one against the other. So you're either resistor or oppositional. And that doesn't give us any room in how we look, in looking relations, how we view, where we're located when we view. It doesn't give us any space for expansion or to stand in our own subjectivity. And so I think when we say the black feminist gaze, we have to caveat that with, you know, black feminisms and different gazes.
In this clip, you'll hear Francesca Soban speaking on resisting, reshaping, and remembering media as black women in Britain. I loved this clip and I loved this entire conversation, because she's really specific in identifying with her interviewees their specific experiences wherever they were in the UK, whether it was England or Scotland, and also with a contrast to the experiences, perhaps, of black women in the US.
So, again, one of the main things that's come across from these interviews is how black women are making use of different types of media, particularly coming together, mobilising online, but in ways that affect their offline lives. So there's a sense of marginalisation that many of them experience, and it's through some of these digital connections that it sort of translates into the way they feel in these primarily white settings, knowing they're part of a collective experience, even if that sometimes means tapping into it online as well as offline. And again, it's just interesting in this situation to see how, you know, it's not only about the visual, it's about the audio as well, and what that means to my interview participants in terms of how they connect to their identities as black women. The main message, really, a lot of different takeaway messages from my research, but one of the main ones is this idea that right now it looks like if black women want to seek out images of themselves that don't feel as though they've been created, you know, within a white gaze, or to appease and comfort a white gaze, you know, this idea of palatability and diluting black representations came across a lot. But yeah, they're wanting to seek out representation of themselves or create it. They're tending to go to the internet as a source of, you know, being able to engage with these media practices.
In our second segment, Denise is in conversation with activists in the Netherlands. Let's have a listen.
Please state your name.
My name? Okay, so... My name is Olavo.
That sounds sexy.
Does it now?
Oh. I'm Amandla Awetu.
Amandla?
That sounds beautiful.
Awetu.
Yeah.
Yes.
How are the people?
Okay, so where are we, guys? Where are we?
So we're at my house in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. I'm originally from Burundi, yes.
Okay.
I came here when I was 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
Traveled around and lived in other countries.
Uh-huh. And so... You're queer, you're here.
Yes. Yes, I am a non-binary trans femme person who is, you know, kinky and pervy and, you know, all the good stuff. And like, I'm very black about it all.
And very black. Oh, that's just very black. And so, like, how is there tension of that here? Just, like, let's start within the queer scene.
I think I want to make a differentiation between the queer scene and the gay scene. Mm. So, like, I think the LGBTIA scene, LGBT scene in the Netherlands is predominantly white and is, you know, sort of able-bodied centric, very sort of orientated towards hugging or nearing towards normativity, homonormativity. It is racist, very racist. Like my first experiences at gay bars in the Netherlands included being sort of chattel, you know, like sort of, well, like mostly like, you know, like how you treat a potential, you know, how do you call it? In Dutch, they call it dickhang. So this sort of the bull that will like sire a bunch of new, you know, like you're treated like that. I've had in gay bars where people would literally grab me by the crotch to evaluate whether or not they could handle it or whether it was worth their time. Mm-hmm. You know, the BBC, you know, Chase, you know, and that's like really normal in the Netherlands. And that's considered a compliment. Like every other conversation I have on Grindr, all about the BBC. And, and it's extremely racist community. And you see this in the lesbian community, in the gay community, in the trans community, like everything about, you know, the difficulties that I have around sort of the trans community. A lot of it is sort of into these beauty standards that are very Eurocentric, you know, like, I've had people tell me like, tell me about how I should like, you know, feminize my face if I want all around surgery, but then talk about how I should feminize it. Like, and I'm listening, I'm like, but you're trying to look like a white woman, you know, like long hair and so there's, it's full of that in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands. And also you see in terms of poverty amongst the LGBT community in the Netherlands is mostly the black one, the people of color who have problems with finding jobs, keeping jobs. When you look at how you're treated by Social Security in the Netherlands and Rotterdam, it's, you know, I've met so many people who are of color and who are queer who need food bank to survive, that all of this is extremely, like, it's a race. Like, none of it is happening according to sort of the standard story. What the Dutch are saying about themselves, to themselves, is that, you know, if you're queer, you're like really happy here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have, you know, like you have the best life you can think of, but it's definitely not your best black life. Also, you're made to choose also in the gay community in the Netherlands. Like,
how are you made?
Like you're either queer or you're black. You're either queer or you're Muslim. It's all of these sort of this idea that you're told that you have to choose between assimilating and sort of be loyal to this Dutch ideals, which are whiteness, which are superiority and all that.
It's like, how is that processed by the black queer community here? Like, what's the support system look like? Because you guys have each other, right?
Yeah.
So I met Amandla at the Black Feminist Conference. And then Amandla brought me to you and talked about the situation that happened at We Reclaim Our Pride. Mm. And so that seems pretty special. I mean, like, is that something that has been formed in any way?
It's like extremely in the beginning stages, yeah. I would say, like, wanting to create a community. This was an initiative that I took together with two other queer people.
Explain the initiative.
Gender non-conforming. Huh?
Explain the initiative.
Okay, so the initiative is like, it's initiative basically of, I had the idea of bringing together different organizations, quite radical organizations, in a coalition to like together form a coalition that would intervene in political demonstrations or events that have been depolitized, and we call ourselves anti-capitalist decolonial sectional solidarity bloc.
Yeah.
That just flows off. You got that.
Amandla is the only one that actually knows. Whatever. No. I always go like dirty sectional bloc.
I need you to say that again, Amandla. Say it.
Anti-capitalist decolonial intersectional solidarity block. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the wider The first time we did this was during the anti-racism ball.
Wasn't that Women's March?
Yeah.
The white women's march?
Yeah.
You put on top of the women's march?
No. Like, that's when I saw, you know, that's when the idea was like...
Okay.
Coming up.
Actually, we wanted to do something like that then, but then that didn't really happen.
Mm.
So then at the women's march, I saw a queer block, met up with organizers. I like saw who organized that event, the queer block, and I talked to, you know, some other people, and together we formed this idea to, like, it was just gonna be for, like, in the demos.
Yeah.
So the second time we did was the People's Climate March.
Yeah, that was fun. Also, okay. The White People's Climate March.
Exactly. Very much. And we brought in climate justice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all of these issues, not just looking at Europe or through a gaze at climate change, but like, how does it affect the rest of the world?
We dropped the art. We dropped ecological racism. And people in the crowd, I could see them look at me go like, why are you going to ruin our little picnic?
Yeah.
That's
something about,
and I think we've been blacklisting anything a Greenpeace ever does again.
Yeah, that's something that that's very Dutch, you know. Everything has to be gezellig, which means fun.
Oh,
gezellig, just cozy, right? And fun.
Cozy and fun.
And
like, yeah, I mean, you know, like, talking about racism, but happy, you know, to be talking about racism. Why you have to be serious? Why you have to be the fuck?
Right.
This is
comfortable,
exactly, just as long as you make them comfortable. But they were like, oh, so like in a couple of months, the Canal Pride is happening, and we were all on board doing something. So we formed a working group, and we prepared the Canal Pride in Amsterdam and called it We Reclaim Our Pride. Mm-hmm. And we had a Facebook event, which was like, the event text was like an open letter, and we had like different people and organizations sign it and saying that they the message of the open letter. And
the focus was really like, sort of the commercialization of the Amsterdam Canal Pride, the pink washing for companies,
exactly.
Also for very oppressive, like, so the police also had a boat, the military had a boat,
Uber had a bus, sexist Uber had a boat,
bank that funded Dakota
Access Pipeline,
they get a boat, you know, and they get to be all like, oh, we're doing really well in terms of queer by paying a lot of money to this sort of the Amsterdam Pride organization
participate.
To participate. But so I think one of the things that we really wanted to bring was sort of talk about intersectionality and solidarity.
Yeah.
And as queer people, I really wanted to reflect how deeply rooted we are in different communities that are marginalized. So aside from the fact that we are queer, but also we are also, you know, victims of ethnic what they call it, racial profiling. Ethnic profiling in the Netherlands.
Yeah, in the Netherlands.
Because
ethnic profiling.
They just don't like to call it racist.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, we're victims of Islamophobia, you know, because we're Muslims in our community. Victims of ableism, you know, and like how, and capitalism and all this, just sort of very intersectional, politicizing message of the Amsterdam kind of pride. So we all, because the pride, you couldn't join because you have to have a lot of money to get a boat.
20,000
euros. Yeah, 20,000 euros to get a boat.
Okay.
So, and get these organizations, like, sort of little bars and gay clubs and everything that used to, like, back in the ages, used to participate
and
in the kind of pride.
They
can't afford to anymore.
Yeah.
So that's how we brought it. And it was a very, you know, very beautiful. Like, we had, I think, more than 100 people showed up, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, a bunch of people showed up.
Yeah, mostly young people of color as well.
Yeah.
Different backgrounds. We had people from Africa. We had people from, you know. And that was a message that people really appealed. Like, they were, oh, yes, we get an opportunity to talk about how refugees are treated in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really beautiful event.
A lot of people was also their first... I'm
demo.
Joining a demo. Yeah.
I had a lot of people come to me and like, thank you guys so much, because, and even people who had been to the Pride, like, this is an actual real, the first time I've been to a real Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that was really empowering. So from there, we thought, rather than a Pride walk,
mm-hmm.
And that was a month later, which was a couple of weeks ago. And we decided, like, well, we're going to bring it as well in Rotterdam. But we also knew that the Rotterdam sort of Pride Walk is different because the Pride Walk, you walk in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. While in Amsterdam, you have to have a boat and have a lot of money mm-hmm. to be on the boat. Right. So we had occupied a bridge at Canal Pride. Uh-huh. But for the Rotterdam Pride, it was like, we're going to walk along. Uh-huh. We're going to be loud. Mm-hmm. We're going to be political. And we're just going to mess up. We're just going to let the city know that these queers aren't here. We're not just sort of like posters. Like, you know, you can't just pinkwash yourself with the mm-hmm. queer rights or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we're political people. We're like, our lives are political. But then we found out quite quickly that a extreme right group in Rotterdam had decided that they were join the Pride Walk. And they were doing so, saying, basically going like, we call themselves the Dutch Gay Servatives. And
so Gay Servative is like a play on conservative.
Yeah, it's a play on conservative.
Gay Servative.
Yeah.
So they also very corny.
Yeah.
Very corny.
Oh, that's shade. That's just salt. Yeah, very corny. And one of the founder of the Dutch Gay Servatives is gay, and he is the head of a very fascist political party that is basically at the moment. Mm. So they hold majority position in the municipal council. They're very anti-Islam. They're mm-hmm. anti-poor people. But they do sort of...
So it's this idea of, like, I'm gay, so all my fascism works. Because, you know, at least, you know, gay.
He's been to say things like, I'm gay, but I'm not a sissy.
Okay.
He's been known to say things like, gender-neutral toilets are just sort of, like, you know... like useless. Who knows? So he's also transphobic. Mm-hmm.
Their slogan is, pepper spray than... gender neutral WC,
so better spray than
gender neutral toilet.
I tell you, my Dutch kicks in when it's insults. I'm like, I know what you said. I know what you said. Yeah. So I better.
Homonationalism is a term that refers to, just very simply put, the marriage between fascism and, you know, sort of homosexual liberatory rights, right? So this idea, this notion that we have developed in the Netherlands, that the Netherlands are a free, open, and queer-friendly society, and has been so for a very time, forever, basically, which is not true. But that the only problem that we have now is the influx of Islamic people who are a direct threat to our homos, mm-hmm. right? Who are construed as white, who are construed as atheist or Christian, and mostly as male. Mm-hmm. So everything, sort of the political discourse right now around queer rights in the Netherlands has slowly and steadily turned into everything would be perfect if it weren't for people of color in this mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. That's homonationalism. So you see more and more sort of gay males ascribe and prescribe to these sort of far-right groups that position themselves as the protectors of the gays. I'm not going to give you that.
So he like a Dutch Milo.
Well, yeah, he is. And he's a big fan of Trump. And he, uh-huh.
What's his name?
His name is Leonard. Mm-hmm. Leonard something.
Leonard Van Mil.
Okay. Yeah. So what happens? You get
so
to...
So we were like, what?
Okay.
You going to do what? Mm-hmm. And we notified the Rotterdam Pride organization and went like, you realize that this sort of mm-hmm. fascist, like, who loves violence, who hates on trans people, who hates on women, like, wants to join the Pride. Going to do? Mm-hmm. What you going to do about that? What are you going to... And they went like, oh, well, aren't y'all political as well?
Oh, so they both side you?
All sides matter, yes.
they were like, both sides.
And we were like, what, excuse us? And then they were like, well, we'll talk to him. Well, we get to the Pride Walk. Mm. We get to the Pride Walk, and the Rotterdam Pride organization, the head of the chairperson, she's standing there and basically spends 5 minutes explaining to the crowd how she entered and how, you know, after consideration, she thinks he's a really nice guy and he means well, he does care about the safety of gay people. And we were standing there going like, are you just spending 5 whole minutes normalizing and legitimizing his hatred?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and a pride. The Rotterdam Pride Walk was sort of the brainchild of a very grassroots queer organization here in Rotterdam mm-hmm. called the Hangout No Teen. And one of the people who came up with the Pride Walk, one of the things that we're clear on is like the Pride Walk needs to be set, the pace needs to be set by the elders. Mm-hmm. We cannot have a situation where we celebrate, you know, our lives and we don't talk about diversity in the city and so on, but we don't actually, we have the elders running behind us, right?
Yeah.
And so that was from the get-go something that was part of how we had designed the Pride Walk.
We went where we had to be.
And we make room for the elders to pass. And these guys run.
And they get in front of the elders.
In front of, through us. And there are three of them at this point. Just three.
Right, right.
And one of our comrades was like, I ain't having none of that. I'm not going to have fascists running, like walking, leading the pride.
Right.
So our comrade takes their and starts running away from them.
Right.
They went ballistic.
Yeah, I can tell.
Like, three of them are like punching, pulling. They assaulted them, and they thought, like, at some point, is worrying that they had taken off like part of their hair. That's how hard they were pulling.
In a choke.
The security for the Pride Walk, so the private security.
Okay.
They were the ones that stopped, like, sort of pulled them off of them.
Police escorts the gay servatives to the front of the parade, in front of the elders. And the police try to make it so that the protesters are kept behind and pulled out of the actual Pride Parade. So the protesters are on the side. They start yelling at people in the Pride Parade. Many join them. They get louder. They get bigger and end up at the back of the Pride Parade. So right now the protest is at the back of the Pride Parade.
Getting to this point where we're louder than anything. Mm-hmm. We're getting into an alley, and this is the city center. This is like the city center at this point, like where all the shopping is done.
Yeah, right.
So it was packed, and we went all out.
So then it takes over the entire situation.
We were so loud; it was ridiculous. Yeah. And we had people come to me, whom obviously, like, very much look like racialized people, and so they look like with an Arabic background and so on. They come up to me and say. And these are, they're not participating in the Pride Walk. They're just watching this happen, right? And they see us coming, going like, we're here where queer refugees matter and so on. And I had people come up to me and say, hey, thank you so much for saying this. Thank you so much for mentioning refugees. Do I think these people, if they saw me walking out of a gay bar, that they would be like, I'm going to connect to this person? Hell's not. Mm-hmm. But us having a political message of solidarity made them go like, this what?
Yeah.
These people get it. And then that's what I think the police wanted to stop. Mm-hmm. And a city like Rotterdam, where it's the most diverse city in the Netherlands.
In the context of all of the things that you talked about, right? You're in this system, you're in this place where in so many ways, more than one scene, right? How do you come home or come into your own space or to your community? How do you commune with yourself? And how do you, could take a moment with it, right? Like, how do you then come to a place where you can still be authentic with yourself and all of what that means without being seen in such profound ways?
Yeah, that's a difficult one.
Yeah, I guess with the We Reclaim, it is something brand new that we're building and... Yeah, we are, because of the attack that is on our bodies, we are also demanding, you know, that there is time for healing and time for being in community with each other. Yeah, this is the thing that we are creating and something that's so important.
Yeah. See, I find it a very difficult... Yeah, like I have a history of addiction and of mental issues, so depression, suicidality, all that. I think that was at when I was sort of doing, when I had internalized all of these mechanisms and all these sort of, you know, even sort of found that the erasure was somehow justified, right? Because we weren't doing enough to show ourselves, right? It was all our own fault and whatnot. And I took it off. Yeah, I took it up on my own body. Disposable, because it is disposable, right? And so in the last 2 or 3 years, I think I've been clean now for like 2 years, and I've had a lot of therapy, and You know, I'm vegan. I eat healthy every day. I make cook something for myself almost every single day. Mm-hmm. I work out every day, you know, and I also, for me, it's really important to find people, community. But in the sense, like, it's not just about, we talked about it with the last meeting that we had with the Reclaim of Pride, like, it's not just about being safe with one another, but I also need a community of action. I need a way to get out of this little house and the internet that shows me everything that's happening really, you know, like, wrong. And my own memories and my own sort of discarded bodies. I need to get out there, feel good with people, be able to have these kind of conversations. But from that point on, go and do something. Go and write something and go and, you know, go on the, be harassed by the police. And I need, like, I need to have hope, but to have hope that is in action, that I'm doing something with it, right? And I think sort of political activism is really, really important to me in that sense, because it just, it brings me also so much healing. Like just having this chat already like this.
It was so wonderful talking to y'all. I really, really, really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you took all this time to listen to us, because we rant.
It's all right. It was all valuable. You should
see me on Twitter.
I just, you know, piss me off. I just really, really also want to thank you for not speaking Dutch to me. All right. Well, once again, I really appreciate the work that y'all are doing here. And I know that something amazing is going to come out of it.
We hope so.
Me too.
Amandla.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Let me hear it. What's going on?
So much is going on. All right. So, Vienna is bringing it. I don't know if many of you have heard of this, hip hop artist called Akunaru.
Akuyanaru.
I'm sorry. Say it again, please.
Akuyanaru.
Yes. It's coming through.
I love her.
And the kid has tickets. And I'm very excited about this because, Slick Rick was supposed to be here.
Okay.
The day I came back. Mm-mm. And Slick Rick has some situations and postponed all his European tour dates to the spring. Mm-mm. So I felt some sort of way about that. But not her. So she coming. And furthermore, I'm especially great about any hip hop artist that comes to Vienna because, you know, a certain Kendrick, last name, initial beginning with L, is not coming to Vienna.
Oops.
And I feel some sort of way about that. And, I'm going to tweet him right now. Like, so how you do us like this? So I'm very excited about that. Tomorrow night is actually Gender Crash at the Wook.
What's that?
So Gender Crash is like a queer extravaganza, a big party full of queerness and stuff. I got the writing bug again, so I'm going to go take pictures. I might write a couple lines. I might say some shit.
Don't hold your breath, folks.
Yeah, don't hold my breath. Yeah. I'm horrible at homework. Horrible. The kid knows I'm horrible at homework. But I'm going to try. I got special VIP tickets and everything. So that's cute. That's very cute. Vienna's been going through a lot in the queer community around racial stuff. The queer community has been very, very challenged around their response to racist artwork, racist incidents, and how they respond, especially the larger white queer community, how it's responding to that or not responding to that, right, with white fragility. So I feel like, you know, it's a great place to start talking, not start, but like to talk about those issues. So I'm very excited to see what happens at Gender Crash. But yeah. Okay. What's going on with you? What are you excited about?
Okay. So I'm in Berlin currently, and there's something called Reclaim the Beats happening. It's a Reclaim the Beats festival. It has a focus on music genres created by Black POC and queer people. So it's like, for those of you who might not know, house, techno, rock, and hip hop. Yeah. All of that. So, yes. And the purpose of it,
like everything,
exactly. And so they say that their mission is, or their purpose is, to empower BIPOC queer folk in the media industry, and to
allow them more access. So tonight there's an event going on that's kind of like also a concert, but I'm especially excited about the concert tomorrow because B. Stedwell will be here and hadn't seen B in like a year, going to get
Don't
to see
rubbing my face in it.
Yes.
Stop it. Don't rub my face.
So so if you don't know who B. Stedwell is, check her out. She's a queer pop artist, and she's dope. She's dope. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. It's always nice to be in Berlin and get to see the queer fam when I'm here and to have fun while doing it. Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have an opportunity to check out our Patreon site, patreon.com/thequeertruth, and hit us up with a donation. Until next time, peace out.